Red Cow Arcade.
Week 3 of the Boba Fett Peacemaker Righteous Gemstones show.
Pretty much. Well, actually not Book of Boba Fett, more like The Mandalorian, am I right, folks?
Very much so. Yeah, the last time we talked about it, we hadn't been hit with the very good decision to abandon its own show. I mean, everybody likes it. Nobody's complaining, but I think everybody would agree it's fucking weird.
Yeah, it does feel like they knew it wasn't working and they're like, let's just work on the show we like.
Yeah, it begs the question of like, why not just have like a Star Wars show and you just do whatever you want.
Yeah, the Star Wars buddy hour.
Or maybe you could do like, you could be like, all right, here's like, there's like Star Wars Jedis, there's Star Wars Crime World, you know, I don't know, like maybe categorize them slightly.
Yeah, or like each season has a theme and kind of like what's that one called? American Horror Story, where every season has a theme.
Yeah.
So like, and like if a couple in a row are the Mandalorian theme, that's okay. And just chase whatever Star Wars stories you want to chase.
You know, it's just like, how did we get here? How did we get here? Like where, you know, if ever there was a character that people would have voted for a spinoff show or movie, it would have been Boba Fett. And yet somehow they invented a clone Boba Fett that was better.
Well, here's my theory about that is, well, maybe not much a theory, just the facts of the matter is they were going to make a Boba Fett movie.
Yep.
I think Jon Favreau wanted to make a Boba Fett show, couldn't do Boba Fett. So he's like, I'm going to make a guy who's really like Boba Fett.
maybe he was like, I want to play, you know, because really that first season, before they started getting into the Filoni-ness of it all, the Filoni baloney, they
your mileage may vary on Filoni baloney.
Yeah. It's, I think it generally is very good in live action, and it's generally pretty wet farty in a cartoon. For me,
well, that's because there's a lot of like bloat in the cartoons, so it's like you have to deal with all the like Filoni baloney and bloat.
It's
good for YouTube clips, but it's not very good for.
Yeah, I was like, I wonder if I represent a pretty large section of the audience, which is like longtime Star Wars fan. So like, of course, like I show up for this and I'm excited about it. But really, when it comes down to it, I only like the original trilogy. I mean, if interrogated, you know, like the other movies all kind of fell flat in their own unique way. And because they're varying degrees of bad, you know, you start to kind of Phantom Menace starts looking a lot better and stuff. But the point is there's three good ones. And but then like you read the books when you were a kid and stuff and you played the video games. So you're invested in the franchise and yet you haven't really enjoyed much of the franchise. You didn't go in for the cartoons because A, they were kind of derpy cartoons, derpy looking. Maybe you were like me and you watched that like Clone Wars movie where they kind of they had a theatrical release of a cartoon that was like three episodes combined and it was really not great.
And then you're just like, oh, this isn't for me. So you just never check it out.
But then like later in life, you find it, like lots of people say it's good. So you're like, all right, maybe so. And so like you find YouTube clips and you're like, that was pretty good. You hear Sam Witwer monologue about, you know, some moment in one of the cartoons, and you're like, this is compelling. And then you actually try to watch The Bad Batch. And you're like, no, it does suck, doesn't it? And yet the elements that they, you know, Ahsoka is very compelling to me in live action. And actually, she in those last episodes of Clone Wars, she was compelling to me too. And now this Cad Bane character is very compelling to me. Stuff I just rattled off. I just know it's going to invite like a lot of like, oh, you didn't see this though. You should see this though. If you feel that way, then you should, you know, I mean, sometimes those kinds of things work out for me, but generally guys, your recommendations suck.
Well, I mean, I get it. Like you can recommend those scenes and things and I get it. Like I can even when Cad Bane shows up, I haven't seen every Clone Wars episode with Cad Bane, but I get him. Like I get why people are excited to see him, and he was really well done in live action. That I actually watched that scene several times because I was like, that was just a good scene.
yeah. I showed it to Nina like without context. I was just like, just check this out. And yeah, she was like, ooh, that was kind of cool. I don't even know who any of these people are. But yeah, there's something visceral about it. I think one thing, you know, I saw a little bit of dissent where people are like, that's weird. He doesn't look like he does in the cartoon so much. But I was like, I like that they adapted him to be even more kind of reptilian. And, you know, it's like every single thing about that dude's face screams like, don't trust it. It's frightening. There's no pupils. There's no lips. There's spiky teeth. The voice, of course, is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
You're adapting a cartoon. He can't. It's a guy in a suit. You can't be the cartoon.
Yeah, I really loved his because, of course, the character would be pretty aged at this point. I really loved the kind of like old man body language in it. You know, he's this like old man killer.
Still very intimidating and still. Yeah.
It's very cool. Very cool. I hope they do tons with him. I'm like, so it's again, it's impressive. It's like, here's Boba Fett. Here's this runaway character, this guy that captured everybody's imagination when they were children. And the franchise just never really ultimately did anything with him. They ended up making a clone army based on him. And, you know, they haven't really figured out him. But around
every character is based on him, but it's not him.
Yeah. So ultimately they were like, well, here's the Mandalorian. How does that sound? And if what you need is like a killer villainous bounty hunter, here's this other guy. So it's kind of colored the, you know, but he Cad Bane, I think, based on the design, based on the kind of conceit of him, I think he has tremendous potential to kind of like carry the franchise forward. That sort of Boba Fett, Darth Maul type character, the intriguing character that never quite got their moment to shine. Although, I acknowledge it would seem that Darth Maul got lots of moments to shine in the cartoons. And I would love for them to do more with Darth Maul. I really would. They clearly were going to with the Solo stuff and didn't make good on it. Maybe they will.
Yeah, and it is interesting because the this episode of the past episode really, like, because they were, like, trying to force this, like, syndicate plot on us, and it wasn't really working. But then all of a sudden we put Cad Bane in it, and Oliphant in here, and there's a threat there. I'm like, okay, now you're selling it to me. I wish this was a little bit earlier.
Yeah, they really should have done it earlier, like... Because the reason the Pike Syndicate doesn't work is because, or it hasn't up to this point, is because they're literally faceless. I don't know what they represent. I really don't know anything about them other than they're real bad. You know, they're kind of like an evil corporate interest of some kind that obviously killed some Tuskens and that pisses off Boba Fett. But it's more thematic of the bounty hunter thing, which is like the fulcrum of what is Boba Fett. To be like, all right, there's like all these kind of interests. There's the Empire, there's syndicates, there's Jedi, and like bounty hunters kind of just like orbit all of these things. And so like when bounty hunters fight bounty hunters, that's kind of what we're here for. So yeah, Cad Bane's just the thing. And then there, you know, Luke looks pretty good with that now that they hired the YouTube guy.
Oh yeah, spoiler alerts, there's more Luke Skywalker. And I thought that all worked. I was kind of thinking while watching this, like, it's if you're just in for the Mandalorian, it's going to be a weird experience trying to watch all of that story, because then it's like, and then all of a sudden a big chunk of it, like a lot of lore of Mandalorians, and then this is in Book of Boba Fett. And so if you wanted to, like, watch it all, if you were watching just The Mandalorian, it might be a little confusing. But you know, I guess they just want you, they're assuming that everyone's watching everything, I guess.
Yeah, they're doing the Marvel thing of just like, no, like, don't try, you know, if you try to serve every single person in the audience every single time, then you're never going to be able to grow the thing that you're trying to grow. Maybe it's something like that. It does seem like they do have some kind of a strange branding problem on their hands.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. It's like, maybe I'm old and I'm picturing box sets of DVDs.
Yeah.
And if there's a box set of Mandalorian, do you also have to put those two episodes of Book of Boba Fett in there?
The right thing to do would be to have Star Wars 1, The Mandalorian Season 1. Star Wars 2, The Mandalorian Season 2. Star Wars 3, Book of Boba Fett. Star Wars 4, you know, like that's how they should. Marvel kind of does it that way too. You know, they release like, all right, here's the Tesseract DVD set, you know.
Yeah.
So you can kind of both group things and divide them, I suppose. But yeah, it's the whole thing, like, it's so weird. It didn't make it really, unless episode 7, and it, of course, there's a lot of potential for this, but if episode 7 sticks the landing and we get a nice big Boba Fett, you know, and we're like, yeah, they really did right by Boba Fett, then great. But it's hard to imagine at this point. and so instead of making good on Boba Fett, the thing that, like, you would have, like, when you bought Lucasfilm for $4 billion, one of the first things you would do is make sure you did Boba Fett right. But it's like, we're going to squander Boba Fett and in its place do a bunch of better things. it's really weird.
Yeah, well, you know, he wasn't bad in The Mandalorian. Like, that episode of Mandalorian, the episodes with Boba Fett were amazing. And he's, like, brutal. He's everything you'd think Boba Fett was. And then in this one, you get, like, you know, two episodes of Dances with Wolves with Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And then you get him, you know, walking around into bars and
I really enjoy the Dances with Wolves shit. I have watched the Dances with Wolves thing from when he starts tripping with the thing up his nose to getting the thing made to the dance.
That is a great scene.
I've watched that like 10 times now. Like, I don't know why it captures my imagination. Like, I just love this rebirth thing, I think. Maybe it's got something to do with losing 140 pounds where you're kind of like, but yeah, I love somebody turning a corner, you know, like a major corner, because it's such a rare thing.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I believe I swallowed.
Oh, I'm tripping on lizards. Sorry, mate.
But then Luke's disembodied voice, though, was still quite weak.
Yeah, it's interesting. So my guess is that was Mark Hamill, and they processed it to make it sound more like his younger self.
I think that's probably true at this point, because there was just too much dialogue to not do that. But I know that having watched the 45-minute making of The Last Luke, that was all AI voice. Like, you know, when they
really?
Trump say funny shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's that thing.
Yeah, because it sounds a little, maybe you're right, maybe it does sound a little dead, but
it sounds unperformed. It's like, yeah, you're going to have to make a decision about the lightsaber, which is, you know,
it sounds like quiet and distant all the time. Like, it's like the reverse of like Bane in Batman, The Dark Knight Returns.
Like, ever present.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like, that's what makes me think it was processed to hell, because sometimes when I'm, you know, processing audio that's damaged, it can sound really weak and in like in the background.
Yeah.
When you take out too much information. So that's what it made me think it was actually a voice that was processed.
But they should feel lucky, because they have like Return of the Jedi Luke is a little flat, like kind of by design. And so, you know, your thoughts betray you, father. I feel the good in you, the conflict. You know, like he can basically just do that in AI form forever, I guess.
But yeah, I mean, I did think this was a way, like, I wasn't thinking about it as much. Of course I'm thinking about it, 'cause I'm a filmmaker and a video producer. So I'm like, oh, how did they do that? How did they do that? But it was much less. It was like much less, like, where the one that even briefly appeared in Mandalorian season 2, I was just like, ooh.
Yeah. I think so. For those who don't know, they're, you know, obviously they've done like Moff Tarkin, they did Leia in Rogue One, and they did a lot of complicated things with Leia that were pretty successful in Rise of Skywalker, because they actually had source footage that they could, all they had to do was kind of like recomposite it and stuff. And then end of Mandalorian season 2 with Luke, it was an actor with a face replacement, like a keyframe face replacement with some deep fake elements. So it was like a hybrid approach to the solution. And then somebody on YouTube, just like that, a guy who has like redone the Leia one, and he just for fun, like he took Alden Ehrenreich from Solo and just replaced him with like Harrison Ford's face and stuff. And it always looks incredible, the work that this guy does. He might even be the guy who like replaced like Bill Hader's face with Arnold Schwarzenegger's face.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I think
yeah. He might be. But he does amazing work, and he redid Luke, and it's like what they presented to us on Disney Plus was kind of, it was like essence of Luke, but there was definitely Uncanny Valley there. It reminded me of Luke from Return of the Jedi, but it wasn't Luke from Return of the Jedi, you know? And when this guy did it, it was Luke from Return of the Jedi. It almost looked like it was like Photoshopped from that. So they hired this guy. I think Jon Favreau is the smart enough fella to be like, if he's doing it better every time, like, sorry, do we not have money?
Yeah, and there's a lot of shots of him in this episode, and they all look very passable, like so passable that it doesn't bother me at all.
There's a few things that they really nailed more this time around. I think one was and by the way, there's this YouTube series. It's called like VFX artists react to bad VFX, where they'll try, like they redid some Birdemic VFX and they did. They tried to do their own version of Luke. They got an actor. They got a wig. They tried in like 48 hours. We're going to try to do better. And they did not do better. They did worse. It looked a lot. They were very proud of themselves. But I was like, this looks like shit compared to what Disney Plus put out. But this other dude did it right. And I think that they actually got the hair more right. The hair matters.
Yeah, that matters a lot. Yeah.
They got that more right this time. And there's something about the body language and the physique of the actor that I think it is the same actor as last time, but there's maybe the cape was fucking with me. I don't know, but he looked right in his body this time.
Yeah. Yeah. He had the better physique.
Even his face unaltered. The performance cadence kind of was more like Luke. So I think all they really had to do was map on, you know, a minor amount of Luke from Return of the Jedi with deep fake. And they basically had it. I think visually it was pretty much immaculate, perfectly passable. It's just that now they got to figure out the voice. There's this one line. He says something like, what will happen to him? He says something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't lip sync at all. Like they just gave up and released it, I guess.
Yeah. And the inflection is on, like, there's no, I don't even know what he's trying to say. Like, is he disappointed? Is he?
His mouth is still flapping when he's done with the line. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
I know exactly the line you're talking about.
It's when Grogu falls asleep with the frogs.
Yeah.
And he's like looking out at him with Ahsoka. And it's just like, rah, 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 rah. I'll tell you this much. It's hard to imagine that Luke growing into the sack of shit that we see in Last Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know. It all is kind of disappointing, is it?
Well, maybe
they got to retcon all this stuff.
Maybe it'll eventually be like Marvel, where there's just so much of it that all you remember is the good, and you can discard the bad, and even the bad. If there's some memorable good things in the bad, you can only introduce those elements, and you know it'll be like just the way your memory maps it. You know, like you dilute the effects. We can diminish the effects of it.
Oh, I guess George Lucas was ultimately right. He's talking about Marvel.
There was a clip of him going around. It was recommended to me recently. It was called George Lucas is Brilliant, or George Lucas is a Genius, or something. And I was like, all right, let me see. Because I've made fun of this guy before. And
just once or twice.
It wasn't the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life. But it was like, you know what? In like a minute and 16 seconds, George Lucas might have summarized life itself just then. Where he was like, there's basically two ideas. There's two happinesses. There's joy and there's pleasure. And pleasure goes much higher, but every time you want it, you can eat it twice as much to get the same high. And joy doesn't go as high, but it's longer. And pleasure is selfish. And joy is the happiness that you share with others. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty much it, man. Like, if you could somehow, like always diminish your pursuit of pleasure and always maximize your pursuit of joy, if you could somehow do that every day, you'd win.
Yeah.
George Lucas. And he was like, he didn't say this, but he basically was like, take it from a multi-billionaire. Like, the pleasure thing, does it only takes you so far, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I got nothing else to say about that.
Good on you, Lucas. All right. Well, in personal news, I went to the doctor today for the first time in 12 years.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. Me too. I think the last doctor I went to was called a pediatrician.
Yeah, I mean, the irony, of course. So, yes. I stayed away from the doctor because I was fat. And I didn't want to. There were actually two reasons. Because, yes, I didn't want to be like, I didn't want somebody to start troubleshooting all these problems that are caused by fatness. I was like, let me deal with fatness and then I'll get back to you. And then we don't have to deal with any of this. I don't need to like get labs for like, look, the cholesterol's high. Look, the blood pressure's high. You know, I was like, you know, I don't need a pamphlet about Weight Watchers. Just let me deal with this and I'll be back. So that was, of course, the irony of that is like when you're, I'll only seek medical help when I don't need it.
Yes, exactly.
But that was one reason. And the other reason was because, yeah, labs, I had one bad experience getting blood drawn. I had this like this is like 2010. I had this, what's called a vasovagal response where, your blood pressure drops really, really low. Because your body knows that blood is exiting like more than a usual amount of blood. And it goes like, hey, we better slow the heart down because we don't want to like hemorrhage blood here. Like, what if we're getting eaten by a tiger? We could stay alive longer if we don't hemorrhage blood. So you start to pass out when that happens. And then you get made fun of because they're like, people are like, oh, you don't like needles? I'm like, no, it's not. Check my heart rate during it. I'm fine. So I learned that I actually have to be laying down. When I do it, I can't be sitting in the little, dummy chair.
Yeah.
And I have to kind of like have food like right there. And then I'm good. Oh, and when you're fat, by the way, they can't find your vein. So they stick you over and over and over again. So anyway, it was really easy, but there were, and I actually got my test results back today. Cholesterol looks amazing. All of my, what was the other thing? Like all the blood sugar stuff looks great. Everything's awesome. I'm like a super healthy dude.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, who knew? They didn't check my balls. I thought for some. I mean, I'm not like disappointed, but I was like,
yeah, they.
I was like, I thought the insurance paid.
Why didn't you check them?
I'm just Am I gross to you? did you just like pass by that? No, but this was a new PCP for me and. Cause I basically didn't have the old one anymore. Like I aged out of it. So I
don't even know how to get a doctor.
Yeah. You call wherever you want to go and you say, hey, I'd like to do it. And then they go, all right. And if it's anything like this hospital group, they make you wait like 7 months because they want to do like a whole onboarding thing. They want to like,
Last time I tried to do one of those, they said like, yeah, we'll see you in 6 months. And I was just like, no.
Yeah, that kind of.
But that's
happened.
Probably what I have to do.
They told me I was 5'4". I was like, oh, come on, 5'4". I was like, was I slouching when we did that? And they just blow right past it. They don't give you a second take. but they asked a lot of really weird questions that I wasn't used to. They do a depression screening. Which to me is like, I can understand, I don't remember them ever doing this prior to me coming back. I know how much depression and anxiety there is in the world.
My pediatrician definitely didn't do it.
Yeah. So I imagine that a lot of the traffic to primary care is people seeking help with their depression and their anxiety.
Or at least a high proportion of them do have depression and anxiety.
Enough that they're like, you know what, why don't we, just as a matter of course, why don't we ask a bunch of questions? And the questions were things like, Like, do you talk so slowly no one can understand you, or you stop paying attention to what you're saying mid-sentence?
I mean, yes, but...
Yeah, EJ does that, but it's just the way he speaks. He's not depressed. He just talks so slowly. He just, like, pass out mid-sentence. I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh at depressed people. It's a little bit funny to me.
A little bit.
Now, what's less funny is there were, like, a lot of, like, are you impoverished type questions. It was like, do you find you can't find transportation? Are you able to transport yourself regularly? Can you take care of your child? Can you buy utilities? Then there was one really specific one. It was like, do you often find yourself in a situation where your food goes rotten and then you can't buy new food? It's something wow. like that. I was like, oh, my God. And then they were just straight up like, do you want to be dead right now? I don't think it was even that different from that. It was like, do you feel as though it's hopeless and you'd like to die? It was something like that.
Well, I'm at the doctor. I don't know.
Right now, maybe. It almost, you know, they ask so many questions and such specific questions that, like, by the end of the 20 minutes, if you sat there going, no. No, no, no. You start to feel like, am I lying? Do they think I'm full of shit? Yeah. 20 minutes in, you start to be like, maybe I don't need to come to the doctor. The doctor seems like it's a place for other people that are.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that even when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because they would like ask me all these like weird like sex ed questions. Yeah. And I'd be like, I don't want to, and these don't apply to me, and stop.
They gave me a tetanus. They were like, you're 10 years overdue for your tetanus. It did, I'm sorry, but like, it did beg the question of like, do I really need a tetanus? Am I getting like filthy wounds like on any kind of schedule?
Yeah. I know when I got accepted in Emerson, they like made me get a bunch of shots like tetanus right. and Tdap and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, they had me do Tdap. And then they were like, you probably should get HPV. We push it on everybody who's under 45. And I was like, okay, I'll do it.
Okay.
At this point, yeah, I've spent the whole year getting, you know, more days than not, my arm is sore.
Give me the other booster.
It was good. It was one of those things that was hanging over my head of like, responsible people go to the doctor. People, you know, dads go to the doctor. And so I'm in a ritual. For me, it's all about like, I gotta get into the ritual. Now I'm in it, you know?
Yeah, I gotta start doing that. Start doing the dentist too.
This is your year, man. This is the year of the dentist.
This is the year. The year of the dentist, the year of the doctor.
Well, you just know that, like, there's catch-up to be done, and that's, like, you have to, like, make time in your life for that.
See, yeah, the thing about the dentist, I don't want to go to the dentist, and then the dentist looks at my teeth. He just starts, like, sighing while he just starts pulling them out one by one, just, like, sighing the whole time. I just
well,
don't
I'll tell
want
you how
that.
It went for me, if you're curious. This is in 2014. I go in there after, I don't know, 7 or 8 years with no dentist, something like that. And I didn't know what I was going to be looking at. I had no pain. I just knew I needed to go. And they looked around. And they were pretty gentle. They were like, yep, your mouth is all fucked up. yeah, you've got a receding gum line. And you've got, like, I don't know, 12 cavities or something. And, they basically were like, for $1,000, you come in 2 sessions, we'll put you to sleep for both. Like, we'll just give you tons of nitrous and, we'll fix it up and you'll be done. And so it was like $1,000 in 2 visits. And I remember one of the times, or maybe even the first time, I saw you that day. Cause we shot one of the florists, the one that was like,
oh, right.
I got these from Christmas tree shop. That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, like, still numb in the face from
the right, right.
morning of scaling. So, you know, you just got to go do it.
Yeah, I got to do it.
And you got to shell out the money, too. That's the other – because that kind of treatment, the catch-up treatment is not covered generally.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think in my current new employer, there's, like, 2 levels of dental care you can pick, and one's, like – the people who are delinquent and one of the people that aren't. I'll probably be the delinquent one.
What else? Tomorrow we're shooting with John for a little while. I don't know.
What are you shooting?
I don't know exactly. I know it's me, Matt, Nina, and John, and we're at least going to do a couple of carts, and we'll probably do a couple of RIPs. Yeah, so we'll go.
It's been a while since an RIP.
People are excited about – people want more Box Mac, so we'll have to schedule that up at some
point. No, we do. I want to shoot some more Box Mac. Yeah. So.
We'll do it. It's just going to be a little couple minutes. those are tough to shoot. I think I've probably said it on this podcast. I've resigned to like – I think that I only want to do podcasts. I only want to do Box Mac if EJ is there.
Yeah. Well, of course. Well, I have fun. Don't you want to have fun?
Well, of course. I just figure like I'll just make different stuff if you're not available. No, that's a better arrangement for me. I'd rather they look good. I'd rather not have to try to like figure out how I'm gonna. You know, it's just like that particular show just requires a little bit more production, and it's difficult. It's too difficult to manage with people who aren't videographers. Truthfully.
Yeah. I'm making my pickle episode of EJ Cooks.
Yeah. So what does that mean exactly? Pickles.
So I shot this over the summer, like the B-roll, and so it's kind of funny just to go back to something I shot last year.
Yeah.
And being like, okay, I got to make an episode out of this, and it's mostly because I'm changing jobs right now, so I was winding down on one job. And I was like, oh, I have some free time. I'm going to go back to this B-roll.
Yeah.
And, it's fun. I think it's going to be a fun episode. And looking over the B-roll, and there's also footage of me, like, tasting them. And so it's just, like, refreshing what I thought about the pickles. It's like, oh, those were good pickles, weren't they?
I agree with me.
I agree with me.
In the past, when like if we've watched an old episode of Box Mac or we've listened to an old podcast, like let's say Nina and I are like revisiting something like that, we'll sometimes like interrupt ourselves on TV to like make some point, and then us from the past makes that same fucking point.
And yeah, it's crazy, and that's kind of the fun thing about doing all this content creation is that you do have a record of what you were thinking and doing at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just remarkable, like, what percentage of that doesn't really grow. Like your neural map of, like, oh, I associate this with this, I associate this with this. If you talk about this, it reminds me of this story, so I always tell it. You could almost be an AI, you know?
Yeah, a little bit.
But you do grow, but you grow, like, with it, you grow in the margins. You grow, like, there's, like, 5% of you that grows, and the rest kind of stays the same. But then that sort of expands over time, and then you only can really observe amazing growth over like a much longer period. It's fascinating.
And then this weekend I'll be reviewing the flamethrower that Sam sent me. He sent me a flamethrower. Well, by golly, I'm going to throw some flames.
Your new philanthropist.
I know. Well, Air Joe sent me something too. I have to cover that as well, but
that'd be fun.
The flamethrower ignited my imagination literally. Yeah.
I dig it, man. It's classic Red Cow. You got your EJ Cooks. You got your some carts on the way. It's gonna be good.
Well, I was looking at like your our what is it called monetization from YouTube, and I was like, the top 10 are like grill review, grill review, grill review, grill review, and then Frankie losing like 100 pounds and
that ranks up high. Yeah,
it pretty well, high.
Grill.
I think people just watch the whole thing. That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, again, we found that like podcast clips perform for monetization purposes, they perform pretty well. On that note, perhaps it's time to talk about James Rolfe.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Being repetitive is my job. My job. Being repetitive is my job. we will talk about AVGN when there's an update, and there's an update. I think, a fascinating one, personally.
Yeah.
Something happened. A change has been made. He's, I think, trying to both announce the change that he's decided on while not overstating it, as to not attract too much negative attention and to not kind of like admit defeat too much. Sort of like a graceful but decisive change of direction. Is that fair?
I would say so.
So it's that he released. So after like a month of silence, and it was true silence. It was, I tell you, that Reddit was getting restless. They're like, now we're at day 23.
No Cinemasker podcast.
Yeah, there. So again, recap. They started releasing a podcast sometime last year, the Cinemassacre podcast. And, you know, it wasn't very good because he's not really good off the cuff. He's not a great extemporaneous speaker. And it's not like he surrounded himself with, like, killer personalities. literally killer personalities. But that's a joke about Kieran. He threatens that he's going to punch the garbage out of people, I think. So, something he said about Reddit one time. I'm going to punch the garbage out of you. but
all right.
sitting there with this Canadian tuxedo, pissed off. I used to wear a Canadian tuxedo, Kieran. So I had long hair too. So anyway, not a great podcast. And you know, the cynics among us said, wait a minute, this podcast requires that James get up and go someplace and do it ritually and reliably in order for it to be successful. And so those same cynics were like, it's only a matter of time before he stops doing it. And before, I think the guess was either the podcast will just be canceled a la Rental Reviews, or like Justin and Kieran will fly solo. So that's kind of like this, I think, the position that they found themselves in a lot of the time, was where they were like, well, we have to make content for this channel, and the guy who's supposed to be in all the content's like not available. So
yeah,
is there any way we could make it?
There were many episodes without him, and then like Scott the Waz would show up and without him. Yeah. And it's just like, what's going on?
Yeah, so it went on hiatus and then it got canceled. This is sort of the pattern of failed Cinemassacre shows. Or I think you know, it's like falling off your diet, maybe. It's kind of like I'm gonna have a little cake for my birthday, and then you're obese again. That's sort of what happens to James. But yeah, he releases the three episode 200s, and then he stops doing the podcast during the holiday break. He tweeted something about we've all got COVID, every last one of us. And then
we're taking a break for the holiday,
taking a break for COVID to celebrate COVID. and he went away. And the longer it went on, the more I was like, you know, a lot of people are like, it's dead. He's dead. He passed away during this period of time. I was like, no, I think it's deliberate. I think he's making some kind of like hard reset sort of move.
Well, I think the plagiarism thing just really shook him. I think it did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's like okay, so you make a bunch of AVGNs that aren't people's bags. They feel like they're written by somebody else and produced by somebody else because they are. But like, as soon as it starts to become like a weird moral question, like why am I doing this?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm just pure fraud. Is that like?
Yeah, because you know that to refresh everyone's memories, there was a couple episodes of Monster Madness. They were bringing back Monster Madness, and a couple episodes were the first episode was plagiarized. Like there was parts plagiarized. They were about to release a second one that might have had plagiarism in it, and then they like had to pause and then like rewrite them and redo them.
They had to scrub most of them, yeah, because the guy they put in charge plagiarized, and he got fired for it, and now they don't talk to him. He says he's got his own Reddit post. It's very sad, actually. It's like a sad situation, but yeah, it was kind of less about like the ethics of plagiarism, and it was more about like how many people did this make aware that James has not been making his own content for a long time.
Yeah, I think
there were there's maybe an overwhelming amount. You know, if you think about, like, there's kind of this, like, you know, dopey subreddit over here, and there's a lot of people in it, but it doesn't represent a whole lot of that audience. It just doesn't. But that plagiarism, and they knew it too. They're like, this is huge for the. I just for the record, I don't appreciate the sentiment that comes from that dopey subreddit that's like, let's burn him. You know, and I know that sounds hypocritical, because I've made a lot of videos that probably haven't contributed to the well-being of the Cinemassacre channel. But but I don't mean to burn anything down. I just like to talk about things I like to talk about, as I keep repeating. But yeah, I don't appreciate the like, how can we cause failure to the channel or something. I would say
the at least the top rated posts are all fairly good natured on Cinemassacre Truth.
Like anything, there's kind of this, like, I think there's this kind of funny, trolly sort of sentiment that represents most of it, and then there's this, like, kind of, you come across it in the replies.
Yeah, you'll dig deeper in the replies.
It's like a picture of a guy it's like the avatar is like Bootsy with a pirate patch or something. And he's like, I'll never trust Justin again. I'm like, Justin? You know, he's like, that guy's pissed about, you know. But then that guy is also too cool for school, where he's like, I unsubscribed a very long time ago. okay. So I get some of the critics, but generally speaking, it's all still very, very, very funny. My favorite new meme that has been coming up a lot more often is, when somebody replies with "take a wild guess," because if the behind the scenes video that we originally commented on and got some attention for, that thing was a treasure trove of upside down tripods and drilling desks. And I mean, it was a highlight really of the channel, I'd say, of its 15 year history. but one of the things, he was like, people ask me, why don't you have any time? Take a wild guess. I have kids. And so everybody, like, somebody will pose some question. It was like, does Jamie even like this anymore? Yeah, some positive question. It's some obvious question. And the top rated reply by a long shot will be somebody going, take a wild guess. It always makes me smile. Anyway, this brings us to the present day, where he released a video remembering sort of taping things off of TV, the VHS video store, collectible VHS, you know, SP versus LT. That's, you know, classic VHS talk. Ground he has covered before, but comfortable ground, familiar ground for all of us.
The dictionary defines nostalgia.
Hey, at least he wrote it, man. Like, I watched it, and I wasn't like,
I mean, and that was the sentiment of the Cinemassacre Truth, was like, this is more what we want, you know? And this is what I said. I said he should be doing things that he wants to talk about.
Just make stuff you enjoy, right.
It felt like this was something he actually wanted to talk about, which is definitely the best direction he could go in.
And then there was kind of like 15% of it was like a little like cringily sappy. But it's all good. It's all good.
That's just him.
Yeah, he's just duck walking around and being, you know,
my dragon in my dreams.
Yeah, close up shots of him going like this. So he didn't in the video say, "Hey everybody, big announcement, something something." He pinned a top comment, and it said, you know, we should, you know, if we're, Since this is a paragon of journalist excellence,
yeah, they're gonna roast us,
burn us at the stake.
Like when I misspoke and said Justin was the big cheese or whatever.
Oh my! Like, no, Big Ryan is the big cheese. And of course, I blame you for that too. By the way,
No, I blame you for not correcting me.
So he said, "Yeah, this is really my fault." This year, I'll be making more videos like this, including movie reviews, gaming, various topics. For most of these, I will be going back to my traditional scripted format, where I write slash organize what I'll say, rather than doing it off the cuff like the podcast format. I feel I'm at my best this way. I agree. Unfortunately, that means the podcast will not be continued. Is it unfortunate, James? But Justin and Kieran will continue producing and editing. Justin will mostly be focused on ScreenWave projects, and Kieran is focused on his streaming channel. So that's where it gets interestingly worded, where there's kind of a contradiction.
Yeah, where, it's like, they'll be working on it, but they're fired. But
mostly not. Don't worry, they're not going anywhere. They're just leaving.
Their spaceship crashed on the way back to their home planet.
I have to go. Gengar needs me. So there you go. I think he's saying, like, and I think he's having a little bit of his cake and eating it too. He's kind of going like, I'm going to do my best to diminish the effects of the slobs. But the truth is, guys, I'm addicted to these slobs. I can't quit these slobs. They make my videos for me. You guys, took me a month to make this VHS video.
I think that's fine. If he can take as long as he wants.
Yeah.
To make as many VHS videos that he wants. I think that's the way you should do it.
If he released, like, let's just for the sake of argument say that he released, like, 3 videos a year. I mean, he'd lose subs, but I don't think he'd lose that many. I mean, I think you lose more subs from uploading too much, probably, or too much crap, where you're, like, disappointed frequently. And I don't know how, you know, like, do you think those videos would perform a lot higher than his current videos? Like, because they're kind of rare events. It's possible.
It's possible. I don't know.
But here's something I did want to say for sure. This is his big chance to do a Patreon. No more bullshit.
Yeah.
This is your chance. Like, and then you can make as, you know, and it would be the kind of Patreon where you're like, no promises. Like, there's no tiers. There's no nothing. It's just like, If you've come along for the ride, if you support me, you know, it's going to be straight James, and you give me money and I'll give you straight James. I think, you know, what percentage of the audience would do that? 3%. And that would pay his bills. Like,
yeah,
for sure.
I think that's exactly what he should do. This is the chance to do that.
This is his chance, man. But I'll say there's like a thumbnail of him being like, "Ooh," with the VHSs. It's like, he didn't make that thumbnail. That's a slob thumbnail.
That's a ScreenWave original.
I also like, I can kind of imagine, you know, one of the reasons that this whole debacle has fascinated me so much is because I think it's so self-evident that it's not working, that things weren't working, that the arrangement everybody was trying to make work wasn't working. The fascination is in, like, so how long does it take before everybody course corrects, before everybody comes up with a different strategy? It's just not working. And yeah. I think, like, after the plagiarism, after the behind the scenes thing, after, you know, the episode 200 got weird, I think they finally were like, I don't think it's working. Like, ScreenWave was probably like, I don't want to permanently ruin your channel. It doesn't reflect well on you, and like, should we just lay off, you know?
Yeah, we're giving these Red Cow Arcade guys too many views.
Yeah, these guys, I don't know what to say about them. I want to punch the garbage out of them. I wrote down something you said when we were chatting about it. I don't remember exactly what it meant, but you said that pinned comment is a farce.
Well, the pin comment is a farce.
Yeah.
I think I probably meant that, I think it sounded like a breakup letter to ScreenWave. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
So there's some part of it that was a farce to me.
I think because he didn't actually announce his intentions to change stuff within the video, there was a lot of, I think, thinly veiled commentary that kind of like implied it. You know, he alluded to his new plans. For one, you know, he had said, like, if I'm all about nostalgia, so if that's what you want, stick around. So it was, he that implies I'm resetting things around here. And then the other one was he said something like he was talking about appreciating media more when there's less of it or when there's less options or fewer options. He said better to have more all at once or less and appreciate more. So I think he's saying I'm going to make fewer videos. And so there's a little bit of a metaphor there, I think, was the intention. But he does have that that Mortal Kombat hat, the one that looks like somebody punched the garbage out of it and put it on him. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I wasn't paying attention to his hats.
Well, the subreddit does. You're probably not like a baseball hat guy. I'm not really either, despite how I appear on Boxmack. But like you know, when a hat gets really worn out and it's just like a bed sheet, like that's kind of what he's got going on right now.
Yeah, he's. I did notice. It is funny when he's the nerd and you see his hairline, and then when he wears the hat, like the hat actually is much better. It's a much better look for him.
Yeah, my only, you know, like I genuinely enjoyed watching that video. I have to admit, I appreciate, I respect him for starting to kind of be like, hey, let's change things up. But you know, I feel like I know the guy too well at this point, and I feel like he just doesn't really have the chutzpah to make a whole lot of content if much at all, and I don't know. I don't know if he can quit those ScreenWave guys.
It's hard to say. We'll see. It does. He's signaling a sea change, and I'll give him a view. I watched this one. I thought it was good. It was fine.
Why not? Yeah. I look. I enjoy whatever he does, whether it's plagiarism or anything.
And we'll talk about it.
If he hires untalented people to make 12 videos a day, I enjoy whatever he does. I'm here for all of it. I'm not here to hate. I'm here to love.
Yeah. I'm all for it. Looking forward to it.
More to come. Okay, here's something I wanted to talk about.
Yes.
We should have put this closer to the Star Wars discussion. Have you ever seen the Ewok movies?
No. No. I remember going to a DVD store where you can like sell DVDs and buy DVDs, and they were playing it on a TV. And I remember like looking up like, oh, there's some Ewoks. I mean, it's probably Return of the Jedi. And then I like turned away and looked back. I'm like, no, there's something really wrong with these Ewoks.
Yeah. Well, that's accurate.
And then I was like, this is something else. And then I noticed like the packaging near the TV. It was like a Ewoks. I didn't even know these existed. And I was already an adult by the time I saw that. So
I continue to think that they're really, I'm like, what? I'm a lifelong Star Wars fan, and somehow I never made the time for the Ewok movies, even as a child.
Oh, yeah. I had a Wicket action figure, and I didn't know these existed.
Very odd. And so I've been introducing Gloria to Star Wars, and it came on kind of all at once, where I think it started with a bedtime story. She always – I don't know about your kids. We do like three books, and then – We turn off the lights, and I lay with her until she falls asleep. And sometimes that can go on a while. Sometimes she gets the sillies. Sometimes I get the sillies. But it goes on a while. And she almost always, especially if Nina reads her the books, she's like, okay, thanks, Mom. Turns to Dad. All right, Dad, now you tell me a story. She goes, tell me a story with your mouth. I was like, well, even the book would have been with my mouth. But anyway, so I'm just like, I don't know. I'll tell you the story of Star Wars. I start talking about A New Hope. And goddamn, man, if she doesn't follow me for that journey. She knows, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And the Force will be with you always. You know, she's right there as if it's Wizard of Oz or something. Like, and when you start to tell the stories, you realize, like, this isn't so bad to have to explain to a child. Like, this is pretty easy. And the same goes for Empire, and the same goes for Jedi. And then we actually, because the days have gone on, we did backtrack. I was like, do you want to hear the story of how he became Darth Vader? And she's like, yeah. Very difficult to explain the prequels to a four-year-old.
But how do you just, there's a trade dispute. And
like, well, you see, there's a trade dispute in the little Chinese aliens.
Chancellor Palpatine and Viceroy Gunray, they meet in secret.
Well, that's Alex Jones. There's a clip of him describing the prequels, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, because he speaks about it with the same conviction that he speaks about anything. It might as well be reality.
This little Chinese aliens, the whole thing's geopolitical. Chancellor Palpatine, he's got the documents. They're declassified. This is CNN reporting on this.
The Gungans. There's chemicals in the water.
The Gungans are hanging out at Bohemian Grove. Worshipping some kind of owl god. A lot of creepy sex stuff.
Anyway,
that's what they mean by the planet core.
They're talking about planet core. They're talking about the inside of a man's legs. It's creepy sex stuff, and it's all tied together. They all know about it. They meet in secret.
Qui-Gon's got the documents.
Qui-Gon's got the documents. So anyway, yeah, very hard to explain the prequels, and then very hard to explain the sequels as well, because you're like. Well, what I realize is I'm like, all right, so I know this has been said before, but it just really came to the forefront of my mind when I was like, so Leia and Luke are now really old. The Empire's back. And she's like, why? I'm like, the Empire's back. and I'm like, the Rebels are back. And she's like, but I thought that. I'm like, yeah, I thought that too. And I'm like, and there's a new guy, Han Solo's kid. It's Darth Vader. He's Darth Vader. And there's a new emperor. And it really is the emperor, actually. But we'll get there in a minute. And there's a droid. And he's got the plans for a new Death Star. Yeah, a new Death Star. I'm like, oh, my God, this is repeating itself. And then it completely goes off the rails from there. But the originals hold up for sure. So she's like, let's watch Star Wars. So we watch the Harmy despecialized editions, of course. Nerd dad, hashtag. And I don't know. It's just like, if we're going to watch, we watch it on the nice big TV here. And I'm like,
yeah.
The Disney Plus color corrected specialized. I don't know where I'm at with these movies. Like, it just feels like I'm giving you a really impure experience. So we went back to the Harmies. And she was enjoying A New Hope. A New Hope's a little slow. You know, she'll stay with anything if you explain it to her every step of the way. She really, if I pick up my phone for 1 second, she's like, Dad, TV. Like, tell me what's happening now. Tell me what they're feeling. Tell me what they're thinking. She, of course, loves Princess Leia. And yeah, it does make you really appreciate the fact, like, you're like, her planet blows up, man. Like, every family member... anybody she's ever like the planet's blown to fucking bits. She never mentions it again for the whole trilogy. Actually, I think after it happens, it's not mentioned outside of Obi-Wan being like, I think something blew up. And then like when Obi-Wan dies, like he's known Luke for a day. He's like, I can't believe he's gone. And like Carrie Fisher has to like protect him from that pain. It's a little different. I mean, Lucas, come on, man, you're a genius.
My martial arts teacher is dead.
Yeah, exactly, as the meme said. So anyway, she's like, can we go to part three, because I had already told her the story. So I was like, yeah, we can watch Jedi. And she was totally captured by the Jabba the Hutt stuff. She likes Labyrinth, and that's, like, very Labyrinth. That's very, like...
Yeah.
There's a little bit of overlap there in the early 80s.
That was the first Star Wars thing I've ever seen, was that opening. Like, it was playing on a on a TV, like a little tiny CRT at a friend's house. I think it was just on cable. And I remember just like seeing the green lightsaber, seeing like Jabba the Hutt and all that stuff. And then I had to like leave to go back to my parents' house. But I remember seeing that and I'm being like, okay, I have to check out the rest of whatever that was, because that was amazing. That first, yeah. In the intro to Return of the Jedi is still one of my favorite Star Wars things.
Yeah, I agree. I think like if somehow that movie could have kept up that energy the whole time, then it would compare extremely well to Empire. But then we get to Ewoks, perhaps the most controversial element of Return of the Jedi. Before there were prequels to complain about, there were Ewoks to complain about. And she fucking loved them. Teddy bears, man. She loves teddy bears. And so it was really funny. You know that part in Jedi when one of the Ewoks gets shot dead and the other one like mourns him, and it's like,
oh yeah,
it's they
horrifying.
Take a moment out to just have a really sad moment. And by the way, it's not the first time that happens in that movie. There's the Rancor thing where,
oh yeah,
the fat Rancor trainer runs up to him and he's in disbelief about it. And you think that's going to be enough. You think they're like, all right, they had their moment. They gave you like an empathetic thing. And then like I cut back to him and he's crying with an alien about what happened. I'm like, they really wanted you to be like, okay, you know, the Rancor's death was tragic. So I think that guy, Richard Marquand, or whoever directed Jedi, I think, maybe, is he like a vegan or something? Is there something like, he's obviously like a very compassionate person. He's worried about innocents dying. But she goes, I think an Ewok died.
Ewok died over here.
I think one of the Ewoks died. So she goes, I'm like, you know, it was the next night. I was like, you want to watch more Star Wars? And she said, yeah, what has more Ewoks in it? And I want,
wow.
I was so ready to be like, nothing. and then I was like, wait. That's untrue. There's two movies and a TV series. There's a cartoon series called Ewoks. And I was like, and surely it's all in Disney Plus, right? Sure enough, man, 1080p, you got it. Like,
really? It's there? I wouldn't have thought.
There's a section under the Star Wars library called like Star Wars Legacy, I think.
Star Wars, please forget about this.
You got to scroll down to get to it. You got to scroll past a lot of Ahsoka. A lot of stuff that they're pushing, but you can get to it. And so we watched Ewok Adventure, The Caravan of Courage.
That's,
and I'd like
mouthful.
To tell you about it. It starts off with, so I really don't know the history of these movies or why they exist, but it was shot 4:3. It feels very much like a Sunday afternoon movie. You know, the Sunday afternoon movie when we were kids.
Oh yeah.
You know, that feel, it's got that feel like it's a movie, but not much of a movie. And, it's like reasonably high budget. They had like huge matte paintings. They of course had a lot of costumed characters. They had a spaceship at one point, and eventually they get into kind of like Ray Harryhausen type monster stuff. And that's probably the coolest thing about it actually. But the movie opens with like two adults, like kind of like community theater actors being like, Mace, Sindel, we're not mad at you. Come out. And then this giant thing called a Gorax, a giant like monster that's composited, like just like runs towards them. And they both go like, ah, and then it cuts away. And then we enter the Ewoks. And there's a moment where you're worried that it's going to be like the Christmas special, where it's going to be just Ewoks like chirping at each other for 45 minutes. But that doesn't go on for too long. The Ewoks, centered around Wicket and his family, stumble across two children. One who's like maybe 13, a boy named Mace, and a very little girl named Sindel. Mace is like, he's trying, but he's one of the most off-putting actors ever put to screen. He is like, he's meant to be kind of brash and kind of is a little bit of like a Luke Skywalker-ness about him, but he's like a big asshole. He's like rejecting and untrusting of the Ewoks at every turn. And the little girl is like extremely good. I think she's like really earnest. She has to play sick at one point. She has to cry. it looks like she's like it. It looks like she's really experiencing this Ewok adventure in real life. To be like, maybe they set things up in the on stage to make her believe it too much or something. But the plot is that their family was traveling. They crashed onto the forest moon of Endor. They do play John Williams' score through this movie. You know, dun 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 dun. And they're looking for their parents who have been missing now for several, I think like a year or something. They've, you know, and so the boy is taking care of her. And they eventually find out that this giant monster where, you know, which all Ewoks fear, this Gorbax or Gorax thing, is what has them, and they have to go save them. And they go see one of the shaman Ewoks who gives each of them a magical item. So it becomes kind of like Fellowship of the Ring at this point. So that's the caravan. It's the sort of fellowship of the Ewoks. And they all go on an adventure where they, along the way, they encounter some like dark magic where they have to use the item to defeat the dark magic. And they eventually save the parents. And they have to have this kind of big, there's like stop motion stuff. There's a rubber suit monsters. And if you're into that kind of thing, if you're into like movie, you know, James Rolfe type stuff, like it's pretty, it's actually not, you know, it is terrible, but in a great way. So maybe
it's very interesting. Nobody talks about this
no
production,
no,
at all.
Well, so then there's a second one.
I didn't even know there was a second one.
There's a second one. So you can, if you're on Disney Plus, you just scoot right onto the right and click play, because my kid is totally into it. Now, this one is called Ewok Adventure, The Battle for Endor. The Star
Wasn't
Wars
there
fan,
already?
Like, yeah, as a Star Wars fan, I'm going like, Battle of Endor. I enjoy that. Let's take a look. I don't think Endor is even mentioned once in this movie. They're not playing the John Williams score anymore, and the Ewoks are starting to speak English. They say a couple of English words in the first one. They're like space cruiser and stuff. And Warwick Davis is in it. He plays Wicket. You know, he's in.
Oh.
But they're now just straight up. They're like, Sindel, you go with Wicket. You know, they're just talking English. It's fucking weird.
Do their like mouths move or whatever? Or?
Maybe slightly. And they're very decrepit. Like you said, like they're it's like the difference in budget just, you know, it doesn't take much. Like if you cheapen out on an Ewok costume, they can go from cute to frightening very fast. So here's what's fucked up, man. The whole first movie is about saving these parents and reuniting this family. The whole movie is about that. And there's a shot the following year or a shot around the same time, and they released it the next year. It's 84 and 85 is when they were released. Again, I assume that it must have been on television. In the opening scene, a bunch of rubber-masked marauders, monsters, scary-looking dudes if you're four. I ought to know. kill the entire family except for the little girl.
Wow. Even the boy?
And, yes, they kill the boy. They kill the mom. They're both played by the same actors as the last one. But the dad, only for one scene, is played by the guy who plays the principal from Breakfast Club. The guy who says, don't mess with the bully, young man. You'll get the horns. The guy who Barry Manilow raided his wardrobe. But he dies. And so now Sindel is in the care of the Ewoks. And there's a witch that is teamed with these marauders. And they capture the majority of the Ewoks. So now a pared down group. They run into, like, there's like kind of an old man, like a prospector who's also lost on the forest moon. They team up with him and they have to save everybody, and it becomes more monsters. They really up the monster quotient in this one. It becomes like, you know, like the Psycho Gorman type prosthetics. You're kind of seeing more of that type stuff in this movie, but it's same sort of fare. It's just all a lot scarier for some reason. And the stakes are jacked the fuck up right from the first scene. I don't know, man. It's like,
Is nobody talk about it because it's not interesting at all?
I think it's interesting. I think it's extremely interesting. I think it's interesting in a similar way as interrupting the Book of Boba Fett to tell different stories that are not Boba Fett. It's like just a very weird creative decision. Like when by the time the original trilogy was wrapped, right? If you were a smart business person and you were like, but we shouldn't stop the money train. Let's do something else that will be huge. Two made for TV Ewok movies is not necessarily where my head would go, but that's where that's the money they followed. And then there's a series that's also on Disney Plus. And this is like
that's a cartoon
series. Now get this. I don't think he's an executive producer, but several of the ones we watched were written by Paul Dini, who, if you don't know him, he basically was the architect of Batman, the animated series. And he invented Harley Quinn and, Emerson grad, might I add, but, so they actually got real talent to work on, you know, they've got girl ones and they all speak English and there's a lot more character, but it resembles Star Wars a lot less. It's more like Gummy Bears or Care Bears. Like just like a Saturday morning NBC bear cartoon, but it ain't bad. There's like actual talent kind of on display. It's a real departure from what the weird kind of shit the movies were doing. it was a fascinating, some of the special effects were embarrassing, man. Like,
I'm sure.
You can't believe what you're looking at.
Made for TV. Yeah, it's an era that is so interesting, especially because, between the end of Jedi and then, to the special editions, I assume there was nothing.
Yeah, and these are it's as though they were overproduced. They really overproduced Ewok content and under-distributed. Like, let's make a shitload of it and hide it.
Like I said, I didn't know they existed. I was a Star Wars fan who had Ewok action figures. I should have known.
There was one kid that was my friend. He was the type of kid that wanted to play outside all the time, and I didn't want to play outside. And so I was always and he had Star Fox 64, he couldn't give a fuck about it. I'm like, can we please play Star Fox 64?
Can you give it to me? I want it.
Yeah, just hand it over. His dad was one of those guys who goes to Rent-A-Center and gets a home theater system, but they have a little apartment and he had the Ewok adventure movies on VHS and he was like, have you seen the Ewok movies? And I was like, no, I feel like I should probably watch those, though. I love Star Wars. And I remember we watched maybe a scene, and I was like, this is not Star Wars. Please turn it off.
This is not it.
They keep making reference to a Star Cruiser. Is that even something that's said in Star Wars? I think they call it a Space Cruiser or Star Cruiser. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Check it out.
Check it out. Disney Plus.
Speaking of Disney Plus, you want to talk about Encanto, a movie we both saw recently?
Yeah. It showed up on Disney Plus. Watched it because I had a pile of dishes to do, my dishes. And you guys were talking about it, so I was like, hey, I'll just put it on. I don't know. It's fine.
Yeah, you didn't love it. We watched it as a family. Do you like musical theater in general?
I do. I mean, I was in productions of Fiddler on the Roof, and well, that's the thing is I thought the music was the strongest part. And part of the thing is if there wasn't music, I probably would have hated the movie.
Yeah, well, it's I think Trey Parker had a saying about a good musical lives and dies by its music. Obviously it's, where you couldn't remove the music and have it be good. The music tells the majority of the story. And it does seem like putting Lin-Manuel in charge of that. And I heard they got him really early, so he got to kind of I think originally they were going to call the Bruno character Oscar. And he's like, could you make it Bruno? 'Cause then I could do this thing with, I think he had a hand in naming the main character Mirabelle, because it rhymes with miracle, and the magical rhymes with magical, and so he got to really kind of shape it.
Yeah, all that stuff totally works.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the themes work pretty well. I like that we're not fighting some evil. We're not fighting some, it's a monster. It's just kind of a family figuring things out, which makes it a good musical. I think it's their business model at this point, Disney, where they're like, we're going to make a really cool animated spectacle, and then it's going to be kind of designed to be adapted to Broadway. Because this would adapt very well to Broadway.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost like... it's almost like what's that movie with The Hateful Eight of Tarantino, whereas it feels like a play.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do I feel about it? One, I'm kind of sick of the whole Disney aesthetic of 3D Disney, where it's just like everybody, it's like looks like what Alfredo from Ratatouille. Right. Yeah. It's just I don't know. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. I wish they would do something else. I wish they would come up with some other thing, because there's something uncanny about the whole experience for me. But I did feel like there was some thinness with the story. And I'm not talking about being like low stakes or being small. I'm talking about there was something that didn't quite click or make sense about it. Like,
I didn't really
understand why people were mad at the grandma. I don't understand why. I don't know. It felt a little manufactured, too manufactured to me.
Yeah, I share a little bit of that, where I thought that I didn't think she acted so outrageous that the whole story hinged on this idea that she had too many expectations or something. And it was like, I don't know if I saw enough of that, or like the strong sister was under all this pressure. I'm not sure I saw so much of that it resonated.
I like that. I like that song, but yeah,
it's really cool. But yeah. So I think, I think you're right. But I think like you have to find all of that story in the music, and it actually is in the music. So again, like the music props the whole thing up. And everything else is very, very subtle.
Yeah. And, I liked it. I thought it was very, imaginative. I feel like, again, my thing is, I feel like they should have not had their powers at the end. the whole thing should be about, she had asked for this miracle and it got her out of this crisis and it built this family. And then the powers start to wane, and then they figure out that now that they have this strong family, they don't need it anymore. And that brings, that's the real magic. That's the real miracle, is when you have that foundation.
Yeah.
Comes back, I'm like, okay, this is a bunch of horse shit for children.
I think that could have worked. My take is that it's a story about everybody is given their role, or everybody has a role to play in their family, and the powers are kind of a metaphor for those roles, and her powerlessness is actually her role, she finds out. So that's her journey. They don't have the same journey. They have journeys related to their own powers, though, like perfectionism and strength and, you know, whatever. But I was watching some behind the scenes stuff, and one of the voice actresses was like, I just love how it's a story about like, you don't have to be any one thing. And I was like, no, I don't think that's what the movie said. Like, you don't have to. I was like, no, I think the movie is actually saying you have a role to play. And like, you have a little bit of say in that, of course, but you also like, you have a role to, you have a destiny. And so I kind of like that, you know, there's a family is a puzzle and everybody, there's a piece. Everybody is a piece to it. I'm a sucker for family stuff. I like a story about like, hey, love your family. It's a good thing to love your family. And I actually, in a way, kind of like that at no point did they, even though there's this huge metaphor for like, this family is disastrous because the house is cracking apart. They never really got that mad at each other.
It didn't really even seem like there was that many problems besides the house, like suddenly cracking. And because there's a perception that maybe things are bad. That's but yeah. Except but, yeah, Bruno seems to have gotten the raw end of the deal in life.
That was definitely my biggest criticism. I was like, well, how am I supposed to feel about a grandma who would ever be like, yeah, I'm cool with my son being banished. Although I get, again, if you look for it in the movie, you can, you know, but like her apology at the end was like, I'm sorry. I was just trying to keep us all together. Like, that's why you just let this guy be banished. Lin-Manuel had a lot of cool insights about it. Like he was saying, my favorite song in the movie is We Don't Talk About Bruno.
Yeah.
And you know, cause it's just very musical theater. And he was like, the conceit of the song is every family's got this, or especially these kind of like big, flamboyant families or like, we don't talk about him. He's the only thing we talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're actually, yeah. And it's very subtly in the music where they're like, we don't talk about Bruno, but, and did you know, this is a cute thing. It's been going around when they all sing their part of the song simultaneously, when there's that kind of giant harmony, when they're setting the table in musical theater, that's called a madrigal.
Oh, interesting.
The term for that musical concept is a madrigal, which is really,
really
cool.
That's very, very interesting.
What else? Yeah. I love the song where the scene before Mirabelle saw this vision with Bruno where they thought they saw it, like, I have to hug Isabella, my sister, who's perfect in every way. And so she has to like go contrive a hug with Isabella, and Isabella starts singing about her own kind of growth, and Mirabelle's just kind of trying to interject in the song for this hug, just to kind of make the hug happen. And she believes the hug will fix everything. And I just love the way it factors into the song, where she's like, bring it in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she, you can hear it kind of subtly. She goes, bring it in. Good talk. Bring it in. Good talk. Trying to turn it into a hug.
Just like, but ignoring the real thing that might actually solve it.
So it's not perfect, but it's, I think it's highly intelligent. And the music is just top notch.
Yeah, the music is great, and it doesn't quite work for me, but
yeah,
whatever. It's not, yeah. I'm not the target audience. I'm just a middle-aged asshole doing dishes.
I'm here to review this. And John loved it. John's a big music guy, I tried to get him on the pod tonight, but we missed him. Says Encanto. What else? There's there are only a couple other things. You know, I don't think I have a lot to say about Peacemaker this week.
I don't either. It's like, it's whatever. I don't think there is much story there. I don't think it's...
No.
Like, I love James Gunn, but there's something unfocused about this. It's got the same, like, a lot of scenes play out the same way. Yeah. With like the, you know, somebody saying something crazy, and then there's somebody has to be the straight man. It's like, oh, you're being ridiculous, and it's like finally, the same scene over and over.
Yeah, and they bat that back and forth, and then finally the guy who's in charge of the operation goes, enough. It's a movie about, it's a show about don't be guarded, don't be masculine, don't be overly masculine, because then you won't let be vulnerable. Vulnerability is good. Yeah, I get it.
And there's like mind controlling aliens. They already did that in Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah. And not just Suicide Squad, but also Slither. And this guy likes his brain eating, you know, everybody's taken over by something stories.
It's like he just did this.
Yeah, when it was like lots of people all getting something jumping down their throats, I was like, oh, okay, this is very recently done. It made me think, by the way, I was just reading yesterday about this, you know, there's this upcoming Toxic Avenger reboot, and it's Peter Dinklage's Melvin, I think, and Elijah Wood's in it for some reason, And the director of Green Room is doing it. He's a cool director. I like that movie, and he's made some other movies that are cool. So I'm into it, and I'm excited. And I was reading an interview with him where he's talking about, like, yeah, we're trying to kind of, like, reintroduce the character, but also it needs to have kind of that Lloyd Kaufman-ness about it, because that's kind of, like, the DNA of it. And I'm sitting there going, like, wait, why didn't James Gunn just do it?
Yeah.
Holy fuck. Like, he'd rather do Peacemaker than a Toxic Avenger remake? Like, that, it would just be so at home with him. It would be so memorable and so special if he did.
Yeah. This really feels like, I don't know, farted out. Like, it doesn't feel like something that was crafted like some of his other things, like Guardians of the Galaxy and
yeah, was I supposed to be impressed by the fact that he wrote it extremely fast and then shot it extremely fast and then released it extremely fast? Because it shows.
Yeah, it shows.
It's a very first drafty, the whole thing. And yeah. Look, he's very talented, so his first drafts are pretty darn good. But
oh, yeah, yeah. But it feels... Like I would if I was gonna do a DC misfit or spend my time watching a DC misfit story, I would watch what's that one?
Oh, something. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's on HBO Max. It's what the hell is it called?
Like Goon Squad?
Not Goon Squad. Shit! What the fuck am I?
Doom Patrol.
Of? Doom Patrol, yes.
Where did I come up with Goon Squad?
It's similar sounds. Oon. Yeah. I would watch Doom Patrol. That's a better version of what this is.
Yeah. As I said last time, I've deconstructed the superhero quite enough. Thank you.
Exactly.
But finally, in terms of what's good, what's joy, we've talked about joy today. Jackass Forever. I saw it last night in a movie theater.
I was thinking you were going to say Righteous Gemstones, but this I'm interested to hear what you think about this. Yeah.
Well, look, I love every Jackass movie. I when the series came, you know, look, I've never seen Wild Boys. I've never seen a lot of the stuff that people recommend. Not on purpose. I just haven't. But I didn't even see the MTV series originally. I remember I was in like late high school and Nina and her dad were going to go see it. And I was like, I'll come. And I laughed and laughed and laughed and watched people snort wasabi and stuff. And I was like, you know, and then the second one was even better. And then the third one is something extra special. That was when they started shooting in super slow-mo, 3D, beautiful cameras. They went even more theatrical with it. And yet it was still that kind of lo-fi. It's just people coming up with dumb ideas. But it also sort of became like in all of the movies, the set is like a comedy war zone. It's like you're living in, you know, Acme Acres or something. And at any point you could be, you know, critically injured by a joke. And I don't know. There's just something so pure and, yeah, I know it's extremely lewd. It's extremely immature. That's obviously what makes it what it is. But it's it felt like the movie the culture needs right now. If I be so bold, it was like. I'll just tell you, it's a Thursday night. I went there with Nina because Gloria was at her grandmother's, and there were probably like 25 people in there, like mostly guys, but some girlfriends, and we were all just in tears. Just like, it was like you would pay $200 for that experience. It's like going on a roller coaster or something. It's like going on a really special ride, like a bunch of strangers, all of us pissing our pants laughing.
You don't have that much anymore, because one, comedies never make it to theaters very often anymore, or if they do, they're not very popular. I remember seeing Jackass 2 in theaters and tears streaming down my face the whole time, the whole audience just busting a nut. It's just like everybody is,
you know, every girlfriend in the place, you know, she's laughing too, but she's like shaking her head. It's just great.
Yeah. You know? There's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it. And the injuries are real, and so you're complicit in this violence, but there's nothing but joy. And And so now they're older. They all got white hair. The injuries are, you know, they introduced some new cast members, which was, I think, kind of a risky move, but I think it worked out well. Obviously, Bam's not in it, sadly. But it's wonderful. They also clearly shot it during 2020. So people had masks on and stuff. And so you can tell they weren't able to do as much on the street, like public prank type stuff. So they just had to torment each other. There's a couple of sequences that are so theatrical. They must have got like, they spent some real money on this stuff. And one of them in particular, they spring on the cast. You know, like the cast didn't know that a massive movie was about to pop up all around them. And if you don't, I mean, I can't wait till you see it. I can't wait. Like the opening 5 minutes alone, you'll just have a heart attack laughing.
Oh, I got to see it. I got to see
it. It's a special, special movie. They're all special. The third one's wonderful too, but it's, you know, and there's a character development thing going on here too, where like we all know Steve-O has been through hell and he's kind of come out the other side and he's still, you know, he's immature still, but he's matured a lot too. And so there's just a lot of really nice dimensions to it. It's just such a, for a movie about people shitting their pants, and, you know, it really, there's something really healing about it, ironically.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. People being cruel to one another and knowing for sure that it's a joke and that they actually love each other is like a good metaphor for something. I don't know. Jackass is smart.
Yeah, I've enjoyed every Jackass thing I've ever watched.
Yeah. So, you want to end it on Righteous Gemstones?
Sure. Yeah, the most recent episode, I love these little interludes where they have these kid actors playing those roles. They nail it.
Yeah, they're so good.
They nail it. Like, the kid who plays, like, Jesse and Judy and... Oh, they're so good.
They really are. And they also kind of... they embody new things about the characters too. You know, they're making it their own. And, Amy Lee is, and of course, Walton Goggins. I mean, like that scene where spoilers, where he, it's Christmas morning and they kind of just put him on blast for like, you're going to need to tell us the truth about what happened with your wife. And he kind of has this really sort of selfish breakdown and they kind of try to reconcile with him. It played so many different notes. It was so...
Oh, yeah.
I'm sitting there watching these, especially these interlude episodes. I'm like, all right, to be real, this kind of outrageous comedy is probably not at the high of, like, a Breaking Bad or something. But I'm like, but you know what? If they do, like, 5 or 6 seasons of this thing and they bring these characters someplace, if there's some destination that we're headed towards, it could be that good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree. I think it's so tight. It's so,
yeah.
It's like made with passion. I think you were saying something like maybe they phoned in the Halloween movie just to get to Righteous Gemstones, and that might be true.
It was like they had to have been working on Righteous Gemstones and the Halloween movies at the same time. And I'm thinking maybe they just automated the Halloween movies and. Because this thing, there's no doubt about it. Somebody really gave a shit. It seems like David Gordon Green is directing more of them too. Of course, he directed Halloween movies. It seems like he directed more episodes. It's very, 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 very good. I highly recommend it if you can stomach it.
Yeah, maybe it's not your thing, but it's definitely it's so good.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of the best. I think it's their best project. I do.
Yeah, I would say so.
I was at Junt's Christmas party last month, and for some reason, like, Aaron and – he wasn't there, but, like, Keith and Alan, some of those guys, they love Vice Principals. And I like Vice Principals, too. I'm not slacking off. It's very, very funny. No. But it's not Righteous Gemstones. It's Righteous Gemstones, like, elevates everything. Vice Principals is a very funny comedy. That's the best I can say about it. You know, it's an innovative, funny comedy. And so I was trying to kind of push them towards, like, but have you seen Righteous Gemstones? And they were very, like, no, we're vice principal. This is a vice principal's family.
No, it's good. And I think, like maybe John Goodman also is putting in, like, a really genuine performance the whole time.
He's not showing up and just doing it for these guys. Like, he's taking this role very seriously.
Like, I remember, what was that? There was, like, a Cloverfield movie with him in it where I was just like, man, he's a powerhouse.
Yeah, and I've heard, I remember Kevin Smith was saying on Red State, like, he never, you know, it's like, it's obviously customary that during lighting setups that they wouldn't stand in for themselves. They could relax while somebody's, and he's like, no, I'd prefer to just stand here. I like being here. I like being here with everybody. I think he's just one of those actors who's like, I fucking love what I do.
Yeah, it shows. And he's, like, everything in, like, they de-age him a little bit in this one. And
he's wonderful, man. He's a treasure. That'd be a sad day when John Goodman died.
No, he's got such a charisma, pizzazz, everything. Yeah. And he embodies the character.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, we lost Meatloaf and Louie and Bob Saget.
We can't lose John Goodman.
No.
But we will, but we can't.
Poor Meatloaf, man. Poor Meatloaf. Yeah, I think all three people No, Meatloaf was 74. The other two were in their 60s. Bob Saget, age 65 or whatever it was, 68 or something. I was like, obviously he wasn't, like, massively obese or anything, but you could tell he had kind of that heart attack face.
Yeah, or he sounded weak. Like, I remember he was on some podcast recently, and he sounded weak. Like, yeah.
You ever notice about him? He seemed like he was super weird. And yet, I don't think, like, I don't think it really amounted to anything bad. I just think he's a very strange, idiosyncratic guy. Like, he obviously had this very, like, profane act, and most of the joke was that it was profanity, which only would work because it contradicts Full House.
Yes.
Otherwise it would be super unfunny. But then, like, whenever he would offend anybody, he would like over apologize. He seemed like the kind of guy that would, like, give you, like, a little too much attention. I think he's weird. I think he was a bit weird, but I think it never really bothered any of his friends or family all that much. I think they sort of liked it. They kind of liked him being weird.
Yeah, I think so.
Meatloaf, on the other hand, I think, like, remember, he was on Celebrity Apprentice or something a few years back, and he like, went apeshit on, who's that other apeshit actor? Gary Busey. Like, he and Gary Busey went into, like, a psychosis screaming match. There's some clip of that. Where they really are, they're like two mental patients that just, like, are sent after each other.
Well, there was some tweet that was like, what, Jeff Zucker, who just recently stepped down from CNN, he greenlit both Joe Rogan on Fear Factor and Donald Trump on The Apprentice. And it's like, he set off, like, a weird, like, chain reaction.
Yeah, really? It's Jeff Zucker who did that?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, his network was, you know, pitted against these guys. And
yeah, exactly. It's like, it's crazy.
He created this entire situation?
Yes, he did.
I think we should, just to heal the whole country, we should just kill him. In front of everybody. Kidding. Kidding.
Kidding. In Minecraft.
At Nintendo. All right, sir. It was fun.
That's all I got.
Red Cow Arcade.